time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 6th of April 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirawa. I'm Chris Walker, and on the 6th of April, I talked to opinionated Islanders Alan Knight and Frankie Hill. I played a podcast by Waiheke inventor Denny Reid about his project to build wearable wings. I talked to Dawn Jeffrey about the Fossil Bay Kindergarten Harvest Fair, and I spoke to Christina Patterson about a get-together for new Waiheke Islanders. As it's the first Saturday of the month, I'm joined by the opinionated Islanders, and with me this morning I have Alan Knight, our regular guest. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
And standing in for Alex Stone most ably this morning is Frankie Hill. Good morning, Frankie.
Good morning indeed.
We'll just get you a little bit closer, to the microphone there, Frankie.
Hello.
That's
it. Close enough?
That's really good. So, we'll just rearrange the studio a little.
Ouch.
There we go.
Here I am.
Okay, you're sorted. You can move the microphone instead of moving your chair if you like.
No, usually moving the microphone, you get a creaky noise and then it just springs back to where it was.
Yeah. So. All right, so we're all set. So, welcome to both of you. And we're just going to, we thought we'd start off with taking a look at the perennial issue. The issue that never goes away, just keeps on coming back, which is the Blackpool Surfdale Esplanade.
Ah, the vexation that just keeps on giving.
Yes. So just to kind of, I suppose, as a brief intro on that, so where we're up to with that is the local board took up option of some funding from Auckland Transport some time ago now, almost a year ago, to reopen the road to traffic. $2 million, I think, was the estimate to repair the seawall and get the road roadworthy again. And now plans have been put out, so we're at the kind of next stage, and there's traffic narrowing going on, be open to two-way traffic. Something I read somewhere like 16 signs telling people to slow down, and $180,000 from the local board's slips funding, which is a significant proportion of that funding, going towards that as well. So that's where we are, and of course that's meant that we have some mixed views in the community about, you know, whether that's the right thing or not.
Well, my views on that are certainly very mixed. I mean, I miss being able to drive around there. I used to like using that as an alternative route. It seems to me that for the board to allocate that much of this year's slips funding to that project is entirely inappropriate. There are so many other local things that could be that would benefit from that money.
What percentage of the slips funding is it?
No, we're not going to deal with facts here.
Well, I'd be interested to know.
It would be interesting to know, actually.
What percentage
is... Okay, I'll get on the internet. You keep talking.
Okay.
Yes, it's... I mean, fine, if Auckland Transport are prepared to put up the money, I must admit a budget of $2 million seems a little slender for the amount of work that's going to be doing on the Esplanade. I've no idea what state it's in, because I don't do a lot of walking.
No, me neither.
No, so, you know, if we were meant to walk, we wouldn't have been given cars.
Yeah, that's what I reckon,
too. The way I see it.
Yeah.
But is it now falling to bits so badly that putting it back together is really a waste of money that could have been better spent somewhere else?
Well, I think it is falling apart pretty badly, and it was falling apart pretty badly before it was closed. From memory, from the last time I drove around that way, it's never been, you know, an easy drive. You have to pay attention. It's not exactly scenic if you're the one behind the wheel.
No, well, things you could be part of the scenery easily if you lose concentration around there.
There does seem to be a very, very strong feeling in the community that it should be closed to traffic except in emergencies.
Yeah.
And, you know, whilst I think the democracy does have its limits, I think it's pretty clear that there's a strong feeling, and it seems like a majority feeling that it shouldn't reopen, and that's good enough for me, you know, in terms of how a well-run community works, you know.
Although it will be interesting to see what happens if another big slip occurs on Ocean View Road, because we've had at least a couple there over the last couple of years, big rainfall, and part of that bank comes down and closes the road off. But then again, is it really that big a deal? It'll only take a little while to clear up, and You don't have to get into town that urgently.
No, well, people commuting to work do, but, you know, I suppose that would be considered an emergency.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could, in those circumstances, you could open, temporarily open the Esplanade and let traffic go that way if it was absolutely required.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I don't see, personally, that there's a big... I would be interested to know what the driver is for reopening it, because I don't think it's clear.
It would seem to me that that money, if we're talking roading, might be better spent connecting the top of Trig Hill Road to Gordon's Road. That's something that needs doing.
Oh, you'll have to... I'm terrible with roads. My geography... I haven't got a geographical mind at all.
That would join Onitangi up to... Whakanefa.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know,
I know.
Wouldn't take a lot of doing.
Yeah,
just open up a road going round the side of the airfield.
Mm. I've driven through there. There's no road, but I have driven through there.
Oh, yeah. It is drivable if you have the right kind of vehicle, but I think it would be nice if they spent some money opening that up so that there was a complete flow through from the top of Trig Hill Road. Back down onto Gordon's Road and the Rocky Bay turnoff.
Mm. Right, just to insert some facts into this, the Waiheke Local Board has allocated for the 2012-2013 financial year $419,000 capital expenditure. So 180 is a significant proportion
of
that.
Half.
It's, yeah, 40%.
Far out. Yeah, that seems to me to be disproportionate in terms of the dubious benefit that will be accorded to the
island. I would like to see the justification from the board for that.
Yeah.
But then again, of course, this is a local board who aren't big on offering justification.
There is a community meeting that's been called for next Saturday at the Ostend Hall, and he thinks of the time and can't remember it, but I'll get that later on for you. And the local board have been asked to that public meeting.
Oh, that should be fun.
To talk about why they think it should be happening.
All right. Well,
I wouldn't miss that for the world.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so I'll dig out the time. I'm good at getting information now. I've got that, so I'm sure I can get the time for that meeting.
Excellent.
Yeah, so, okay, so it seems, where's the argument here? You're in agreement with each other.
It would be interesting to have a dissenting view.
Yes. Like I say, I would love to see it reopened to traffic, but I can see that this is probably not a priority.
Mm.
Sad but true.
All right. So,
mind you, on the subject of roading, I wish they'd get Onitangi Street finished. Oh my God!
Yes.
I work along there, of course, so I have to, I just have to go there every day, and it was bad enough before the rain started falling. Now it's
appalling,
weird mudslip road.
Terrible.
I think there's no doubt it is going to look lovely once it's done. It's just not very lovely at the moment.
But there's also around the whole roading thing, there's this curbing and channeling stuff that's going on. Now, I don't know a lot about it, but I've read lots of opinions that curbing and channeling isn't necessarily the appropriate solution for Waiheke. That there are other ways to deal with water that actually work better for essentially a rural environment.
Yeah. Can we get a civil engineer in here? Anyway?
Yeah. So I guess every time I see roadworks being done and the whole curbing and channeling thing, I don't get warm fuzzies. I just feel more irritation that things are being done on this island that don't suit the character of the place. And for some, I don't understand what the driver is, except for perhaps money, that people are making money out of it, and that's all it's got to do with, it seems to me, you know. Someone enlighten me if that's not the case, you know.
It does sound pretty likely. I mean, if you're a council official who's in charge of allocating the spending, you must get taken out to an awful lot of nice lunches.
I'm sure you do. Technologically challenged, Alan Knight doesn't know how to turn his phone off.
Is that a new one?
It is a new one. Now, you know. Who was it? Arthur C. Clarke. His Clarke's Law. Any sufficiently advanced piece of technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yes.
Well, Knight's Law is any sufficiently advanced piece of technology is a pain in the bum until you learn to use it, and that one's taking me a while.
Yeah. Until I teach you how to turn it off by waving your hand over
something. Or just shouting at it.
That'd be good. You shout at your phone, shut up!
Shut up, yes. Sorry, wait.
He doesn't know how to
Let's
turn the thing off.
Let's have a look. Let's see if we can figure it out.
That's the way to deal with technology.
I mean, I don't even know how to turn that phone off at the moment. It's most annoying.
Mm. Yes.
I couldn't help myself. 2 Degrees phoned me up and said, you're eligible for a free smartphone that's incredibly, well, probably smarter than you are. Would you like one for free? And I just had to say yes.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty hard to say no to free stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to move on to this issue of religion in schools.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes. No, so, which is, you know, I don't know, if I wouldn't say it's been the kind of the issue of the island, but it's certainly certainly been kind of bending the minds of a few people on a few forums around the place.
It has, yes. And I mean, I must have put my hand up and say it was me that started
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Alan, it's all your fault.
It was all my fault.
Such a bloody stirrer.
We're going to really have to tiptoe around this one fairly carefully because we really don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But
no, that's true.
There was a sign that appeared at the KP roundabout promising that a certain religious organisation were now in residence at the school hall, having moved on from another local venue. And I found myself worrying about that a little bit. I support the idea of a completely secular school system. If you want to send your kids to a religious school, well, you know, be cruel and do that to the poor little gods. But as far as the public school system goes, religion is something that needs to be kept very separate from it. And have the school really thought this one through?
Well, I guess I do have a slightly different opinion, although in the same basic area as Alan about this. I have no problem with a school such as a church such as the particular church who don't have a physical base anywhere, hiring out school halls or whatever to run activities in separate from the school day. My concern once the issue had been raised and I looked at what was going on was the appearance of a program being run with the support of the school in some way that one claimed to be secular in one forum and two claimed not to be secular in another forum, and just the general appearance that is given by the situation at the moment that this church is based at the school. So those two things for me, not that they were hiring a school building to do things in, that doesn't bother me at all. I think these buildings are, like school halls are there for the use of the community, churches are part of the community, people who believe all sorts of unusual things are part of the community and they are entitled to hire those places out. It was the appearance of a connection between the school and this church and the appearance of non-secularity of a particular program that was supposed to be secular. So those were my concerns, that there was some...
Yes.
Even if it was just the appearance, that was my concern. Because I do strongly believe in the separation of education and religion.
Yes, very definitely. Mm. Because it is interesting looking at the way in which religious people seem to be getting this very paranoid feeling about, oh, aggressive atheism. And it's like, no, I've rarely met any aggressive atheists. I've met an awful lot of couldn't care less agnostics. But it would seem to me that the problem with religion these days is that they can't put their own house in order. And it's no good. People, particularly in fringe religious activities. I mean, you know, bad enough with the mainstream churches, the Anglican and Catholic churches and things like that. But when you get these strange little churches that are set up by random people who can then give themselves whatever title they want, you know, up to and including Archbishop. I mean, it surely can't be long before Brian Tamaki decides that he is in fact an Archbishop, not just a bishop. It's when you have these random people assuming these titles, calling themselves pastor and whatever else, I think they need to realise that to a lot of us, it's like, we're not comfortable with this. This looks weird, and you are not doing your own cause any favours.
So what do you think of this, you know, the charter schools proposal, which would mean that a group, such as a church, could get public money to set up their own school and run, you know, run a school which did follow a particular doctrine, which would be for children of parents who, you know, who had that belief, but would be publicly funded?
I'm in favour of that.
So long as the Church of Satan or the, you know, the...
Or the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Whatever. So long as this is, equal opportunity for all to do that. I rather suspect it won't be, though. Because, you know, every culture and every society brings its own biases to these things. And, in general, no, I have no objection to that.
No.
Even though it's publicly funded?
Even though, yeah. People have to be free to be able to do these sort of things if they want to. But given it's just the idea of religion coming into the public school system.
Yep.
Although, I can't help but think that if there was at least some element of religious background teaching offered to all children, then maybe we wouldn't have children... being taken in by some of the more weird fringe religions.
Well, during this debate, you see, one of the things that did occur to me, which I didn't mention to anyone at the time, but one of the things that occurred to me is perhaps there should be an age of consent with religious teaching.
Ooh, yes.
In much the same way as there is around other things.
Not a bad idea.
You know, fine, you know, once people are adults, you can introduce them to all sorts of interesting ideas that you would like them to share, but young kids with impressionable minds, maybe not. I don't know. That was just a passing fancy that I thought.
See, it has often seemed to me with religious teaching in school that it's all very well for those who either don't believe or quite vigorously disbelieve. Fine, you have no spiritual side to you. That's fine. But if for those children who are naturally given to seek a spiritual side to their natures, if you don't teach them about the possible pitfalls of religious behaviour, the next thing you know, they're knocking on your door waving Jehovah's Witness pamphlets at you because they had to, that spiritual side of them needed some outlet, and the next thing you know, they're lost to the Jehovah's Witnesses or Seventh-day Adventists or whatever. Whereas if children had received some basic grounding in how spirituality works, they'd have seen churches like that coming and wouldn't have been sucked into them.
Yeah, I don't know that that's true, though. I mean, I think, you know, people are drawn to seek out what they're drawn to seek out, and the particular flavour of spirituality that people are attracted to is informed by a lot more than just ignorance. You know, I think. certainly I went through, I'm one of those kids who was drawn to seek out different... I explored lots of different things when I was a youngster, including evangelical Christianity, and decided it wasn't for me pretty quickly, you know. So, you know, why I decided it wasn't for me as opposed to someone else who leapt in and became a door-knocking, tongue-speaking, whatever you want.
Sad
act. You know, whatever. I don't know. I don't know what the difference is, but I do think it's a lot more complex than just ignorance, you know. There is something inside us that draws us to things. This might be a bit too serious for opinion. But, you know, everyone has their own path, you know, and they're entitled to take it. But I'm not comfortable with again, getting back to the original topic, I'm not comfortable with people imposing their path into the education system, education system.
But there's got to be a place, isn't there, for, you know, when you live, say, in New Zealand, in a Western society like New Zealand, there's a place for knowing some of the ideas or stories that inform our culture. You know, I mean, otherwise you've got kids who think that Christmas is about Santa Claus and Easter is about bunnies. Without realising that there's something deeper there, which is, you know, whether or not you're a believer in those religions is an important part of our culture and society.
Yes, and how would you even begin to understand strife in places like Northern Ireland unless you understood the religious...
Well, teach them about all of it.
Yeah.
You know, not just Christian-based religions, all of them, you know. So spiritual/religious studies, you know. That I'd have no problem with that. So long as it was... equal, again, you know, a whole range of ideas presented and then they can make up their minds for themselves.
But I was wondering whether a point will be reached where atheists will actually turn to roaming the streets, knocking on the doors of Jehovah's Witnesses and trying to press the works of Richard Dawkins on them. Have you heard the word of Richard Dawkins? You should read him. It made a big difference to my life. He could help you too.
That would be funny.
So I'm talking to the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Frankie Hill. And we did have one more thing, didn't we? But I can't recall what it was.
It was about artworks and, again, council funding,
right.
I think.
Yeah, so this is the Colin Bearden has raised the spectre again. He's raised this before, that there is a threat to the whole artworks complex and that the whole place is going to be bowled.
Yeah.
Well, I have to slightly see where Colin is coming from on this one. Of course, I spent a while myself trying to keep Artworks Theatre going, and you do get a feeling once you're in there after a while that there are people who would just like to pull the plug on the place and knock it down.
Hmm.
Poor old Jib Dust Hall. It's not in good shape, never has been. There's been skullduggery and treachery and all sorts of things going on with the people left in charge of it. One of these days I may well write down an account of my experiences there, because there were some deeply unsuitable people left in charge of the actual running of it. People who were utterly untrustworthy. And if the theatre has failed to live up to its initial promise, then these people bear a lot of the responsibility. And I can see why Colin Bearden is a little bit nervous about it.
Hmm. Well, the thing that jumped out at me, I have to say, from the article is, again, a question of local board funding. It's one sentence, and its draft plan was grotesquely biased. This is a quote from Alan's article. Colin's article. From an arts budget of $250,000, it proposed spending $150,000 on a single sculpture for Alison Park.
But don't get me started.
So
on
there
Alison
we go.
Park.
But you see, this is
but
the thing.
We must point out that actually, after the public submissions, they scrapped that.
Right. Yeah. Well, which
right
is a good
too.
Thing. Which is a great thing, and it's an anomaly from my observation of the behaviour up
the
to this spend, point.
The spending by the local board of ludicrous amounts of money on stupid bits of sculpture to clutter up Alison Park is just an offence.
Now, there is another one being bought, of course.
Of course, yes.
And then we've got the proposal from the people at Rocky Bay to have a replica of their store put up opposite the store.
Yeah, just the storefront.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, see, that's all part of the same issue, isn't
that
it?
That could be quite confusing if you
really would, wouldn't it?
Catching the buzz drunk.
Yes.
So, but, you know, I mean, that's, rather than being this sort of actual kind of Machiavellian plot, perhaps it's simply the fact that funding is going on things that are less of benefit to the community.
Yeah, I see
again.
No benefit to the community of these rubbishy bits of sculpture.
Then artworks, which, you know, regardless of its shortcomings, to me has been a place that I've spent a lot of time, a lot of very enjoyable time at over my years on the island. And it certainly deserves to have some loving care and attention paid to it.
Very definitely.
From my opinion.
Yes, yeah. But it would be difficult at this stage to stand outside the door of that place and gaze upon the foul mess left behind by Mainzeal.
Yeah.
And feel confident that the people who are in charge of these things have even the slightest idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't drive past that great big mess outside here without thinking, wouldn't it be lovely if there was just some form of accountability here? Somebody at the council got the correct incentives to give Mainzeal the go-ahead to make that mess, even though Mainzeal was looking shaky.
Yeah.
At what point? Well, I know I'm. You may say I'm a dreamer.
No,
the line goes, but no. I would love to think that somewhere along the line, some pen pusher was actually made to stand up and say, "Why did you give the contract to Mainzeal, and you're now responsible for that mess?" I know it won't happen.
Well, they should be made to come and commit harakiri in the middle of the mess, I think.
You know what I think
that
should do?
That'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah.
The people who I feel the most sorry for out of this whole mess of the library are those security guards.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
They're sitting there, you know.
What an awful job.
What an awful job. They sit out. I mean, the other day I had to drop off something in the library over the Easter weekend. There was no one. The library was closed. There was no one about. And here's this poor guy sitting there looking at the foundations. thinking, I've got six more hours of this to go.
I bet they're not allowed to read books or anything.
Unbelievable. Yeah, you know.
But I mean, why exactly do we require security cars to guard over a hole in the ground and some bits of rubble?
Osh.
Oh.
That's exactly what it is.
Yes.
It's to make sure nobody wanders on
there
and gets hurt.
There was a fence at one point.
Oh, you know, the contractors who hadn't been paid came and took it away.
Right.
I was there the day it happened.
Surely to goodness, you're meant to be giving the opinions, not me, but surely to goodness, it's got to be cheaper to put up a fence than to pay a security guard.
Well, this is I think this really is. It's one of those things where you could start to give an opinion, but then that opinion would be punctuated by bits of hysterical weeping, shouting, swearing.
Far as that sort of, you know, dreaming thing goes, I read this really good line the other day. It's utopia is not the goal, it's the direction. We are headed in that direction.
Yes.
And one day all the bureaucrats will be held responsible for the decisions they made.
Would be so nice. I mean, have Len Brown and his various creepy little bureaucrats stand outside that mess and explain to us how it got that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
exactly.
Here we are, we're looking at this.
Every single step.
There is no clear direction of when that mess will be cleared up and when our new library.
It'll all be better when Christine Fletcher's in charge, won't it, Alan?
Oh, God.
Well, John Banks.
Oh.
Bring him back. Bring back Banksy.
I think he's done himself in politically.
Yeah, well, Hitler got the trains running on time. Does that mean I've Godwin this?
Strangely enough, speaking of John Banks, we actually got him to do a bit of a double take at us. We were in O'Carroll's bar on Christmas Eve on our traditional beer Arab outing. So we're all sitting outside O'Carroll's, dressed in full Arab gear and quaffing craft beer in large quantities and being quite noisy. And John Banks and someone I take to be his wife walked past and did this double take at the sight of Arabs. And there were two or three of us who sort of shouted out pretty much in unison, "Don't worry, you won't remember seeing us tomorrow."
Very good. All right. So I've been talking to Frankie Hill and Alan Knight, the Opinionated Islanders.
Was that opinionated enough?
It was.
Yeah, oh, good.
It was good.
Okay.
Can we offer one final opinion now that we're getting into autumn? To let this message go out. Summer's now over. If your phone number doesn't begin with 372 and your permanent address doesn't have 1081 as your postcode, it's time to go home now. This is the equivalent of the fantastic party. It's now 4:30 in the morning and people are walking around still sort of sipping out of the cans that people have put their cigarettes out in. No, it's time to call a taxi, or in this case a ferry, and go home.
Yes, totally agree.
All right, thank you very much to both of you. And the Opinionated Islanders, we will be back on the first Saturday of next month here on Island Life.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
So what I'm going to play now is a piece which was recorded a couple of years ago now, maybe as long as 3 or 4 years ago, from Denny Reed. Denny took part in a podcast course that we ran here at Waiheke Radio. And this is kind of part of what we hope to be doing over the next few months here, is kind of looking back each Saturday, maybe playing something once a month or so from the past 5 years that Waiheke Radio has been on air. And this is an interesting piece because Denny's working on a project to build wings so a human can fly like a bird. And he talks about this in this podcast, which he recorded, which is, nice little piece from Denny Reed.
My name is Denny Reed, and I have lived on Waiheke for 26 years. For the last few months, I have been creating wearable folding wings, and have been invited to present the concepts at the European Air and Space Conference, to be held in Manchester from October 26, 2009. This is Europe's most prestigious aerospace conference, and is held every 2 years. The title of my talk is Can Humans Fly Like Birds? To fly like a bird, to soar like an eagle, is a primeval dream of mankind, and I thought you might be interested. Can a human really fly like a bird? The answer is yes. Not only can we fly like a bird, we can fly better and fly farther than any soaring bird. Why? Because size works in our favor, since air resistance decreases as size increases. Thanks to nature's constant G-stability system, flying with an efficient cambered wing and no tail is a practical proposition. Constant G-stability is a mechanical feedback system which provides pitch stability for birds, bats, and pterosaurs. I presented my discoveries at the last European Air and Space Conference held in Berlin in 2007. This year, I have been working on creating wearable folding wings for soaring flight. Imagine having wings neatly folded along your back. You can walk around wearing them, even ride a bicycle to a takeoff site. Efficient, lightweight, folding wings will free us from the burden of gravity and physical strength to soar across the landscape silently, gracefully, buoyed up by natural air currents. With constant G-stability, the wings fly at constant lift and will not overload in gusty air, giving safety, low weight, and pilot comfort. You are not thrown around by the wind. You fly and land where you want. If wearable folding wings are to be useful, the pilot needs to be able to fly in most weather conditions, to soar even when air currents are weak. Why should a retired gentleman invest time and energy pursuing the dream of flying like a bird? Is it because no one has done it before? Am I so arrogant to imagine that I can succeed where all others have failed? When I was 30, before coming to New Zealand, I was a glider designer in Germany. Before that, I was a geophysicist in Canada. My aim is to build efficient, light, and economical wearable folding wings. Inspired by nature, wing folding is part of the system and is not an add-on luxury. When flying, the wing will flex, sweep, fold, and twist to keep lift constant without pilot input. The flyer does not have to control the wing directly, but gives it instructions using two control handles next to the pilot's hips. The elliptical wing shape and structure are inspired by nature. Bone-like tubes make up the wing spars, comprising upper arm, forearm, and hand. The joints for folding are shoulder, elbow, and wrist. Lift forces tension the sail-like wing made from rescue orange raincoat nylon. The sail is double surfaced and inflates in flight for an excellent airfoil shape. There are no surface seams, nor does the structure touch the upper wing surface, ensuring the lowest possible skin friction drag. The pilot is enclosed in a fabric sheath blended into the wing undersurface, and his helmet fares smoothly into his shoulders to minimize drag. He wears the wing like a backpack. While flying, added support is provided by body straps. The hardest part has been making artificial wingtip feathers. These reduce low-speed drag and greatly increase safety for takeoff and landing. My concept is to have them retract into the wing for folding and high-speed flight. When I started, I had little idea of how difficult this would be to achieve. Mankind's dream to fly like a bird can now be realized. This opens new vistas for personal flight, including recreation, sport, research, and many other possibilities. The technology is efficient, low cost, and practical, offering the experience of soaring flight to a broad spectrum of flyers. The potential for further expression is vast, limited only by imagination. Traveling to Manchester is expensive, yet that is only part of the challenge. The big one is communication. It is an opportunity to share and expand man's ancient yearning to fly like a bird. I appeal to fellow Waiheke Islanders to help with finance and support. You can contact me at 372-7452.
So tomorrow we've got the annual event down at the Fossil Bay Kindergarten, which is the Harvest Fair, and the organiser Dawn Jeffrey is with me. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, hold on, I'd better turn on the right microphone for you. I think there for a sec. There we go. How's that?
Morning, Chris. Morning, Waiheke.
Brilliant. So this is an annual event and one that people kind of look forward to, isn't it?
Sure is. Yeah.
So this is run as the major fundraiser for the kindergarten, isn't it?
It is, Chris. It's our big fundraiser that we have each year. It's kind of evolved over the years. Some people might remember it as the Country Fair we used to have in January, and now it's the Harvest Fair. And this year we're fundraising for a new community building. The kindergarten's growing. We need more space. So this building will encompass our parent library, shop, our play circle groups, which are parents coming along with their two-year-olds once a week for a little taste before the children move into kindy, and craft circle. It's going to be a real multi-purpose space, so it's a really good cause to be fundraising for.
Yeah, so Fossil Bay's kind of in a bit of an expansion mode at the moment, isn't it, really? I mean, it's like the fair, I suppose, how it's changed. It's had its ups and downs over the years.
It is, yeah. The kindergarten's constantly evolving and trying to meet the needs of the community, yeah.
So how many kids have you got going down there now?
Well, we've got a licence for 44 children a day. We're not completely full at the moment. We've got a bit of a wait for the nursery room, for the three-year-old room and play circle, and we've got a little bit of space in the older rooms. Yeah, but it's pretty busy down there.
Yeah, good stuff. So the fair is quite an event, isn't it? I mean, it's not just kind of going along and, you know, jar of jam and a few old magazines, is it?
No. We've got a lot. We've got something for everyone. It's a family fair. It's a family day. It's a like an old-fashioned style fair. We have a lot of stalls, a big market area, lots of stalls that the kindergarten puts on, and then also the outside stall holders. Lots of incredible food, and lots of games for the children. We also put on workshops or talks for adults. So, for example, this year we've got John Stansfield coming along. He'll be talking about organic gardening. We've got Richard from Waiheke Honey talking about beekeeping, and Helen Alscott from Waiheke Herbal Health. She'll be doing a weed walk around the farm. So there's a few nice things for the adults. They're all free. And then we've got some incredible local musicians coming along to entertain as well. Yeah.
So is there a timetable somewhere that people can see so they figure, hey, I'd like to go to that workshop and figure out when it is?
Yep, I could put that on our Facebook page, actually. That's a great idea. There's going to be a blackboard by the area where it's going to be. So once you're down there, you'll be able to see who's speaking when.
Yeah. So when do things go? I mean, does it go all day? Or?
No, it starts at 10 and finishes about 2. Tomorrow, daylight savings finishes, so we'll put our clocks back an hour, and so we'll get an extra hour tomorrow, which will be great.
Yeah.
And we've got a few new things this year as well. We've got pony rides down at the fair tomorrow, and also Darren from Waiheke Circus. He's going to be down there with his team doing circus school workshops for the kids too, which will be great.
Great. Oh, yeah. There's going to be plenty going on then.
There is, yeah. We're also doing a few new things with the food this year, and we've been sponsored by a company called Moorish that specialise in organic and free-range meats, and we're going to be doing some spit-roasted pork and a sourdough bun, and come along and buy one of those, and you go into a draw to win a $150 meat hamper delivered to your door of organic meat.
So there's quite a bit of an organic theme going through the fair, isn't there?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And it's part of our philosophy as well. You know, part of the Steiner philosophy is it's holistic education, and so that comes back to our physical bodies and how we're nurturing those. So the food the children have at kindy is organic food that we buy in. They have a hot organic meal every day. So we're just kind of taking what we're doing onto another level for the community. Yeah, we're going to have Debbie Bray talking about making fermented drinks from home. Liz Bennett talking about making sourdough. So yeah, it's all awesome, nutritious food.
Great, know. Good stuff. Well, I'll be down there. Come along for lunch at least. And when and the music's going throughout the whole time?
Yeah, I think they're going to kick off about 11, yeah. And so we've got Aaron Carpenter coming down, Ian Simpson, Neil Goschel, Mojo Rises, Kiri Eriwata, and a visitor to the island, a lady called Jessie Wild, who's supposed to be pretty amazing.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So, Fossil Bay, so the for people who don't know where it is, where do they go?
Yeah, it's just down the road from here, actually. It's down Karora Road, which is, 5 minutes from Onirua. Yeah.
Down towards Ofanaki Bay.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep. Yep.
And I know parking's always a mess, but you
it
get
is,
that.
But you just bear with it.
Yeah. Just keep on going along to Ofanaki Bay and park there, you'll be fine.
Yeah, there is a big car park down there. Yeah, yep. That would be one way to do it. We've had lots of sponsors from the community again this year. It's just been absolutely incredible. So do check out the auctions table. We've got dinner vouchers down there. We've got family photo sessions, clothes from We Are Yoga, Premaloka Yoga, passes, there's so much stuff. Come down and have a look. It's like a silent auction where you just put a bid, and the highest bid at the end of the day is the winner. Some great stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, Dawn. So
thank you.
Good luck for tomorrow.
Thanks,
and,
Chris.
And hope you meet your fundraising targets.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So the Harvest Fair tomorrow at Fossil Bay, the Rudolf Steiner Kindergarten down Karora Road.
Waiheke Radio.
You're on Waiheke Radio. This is Island Life, and I'm joined on the phone by Christina Patterson. So, Christina, you're organising an event this afternoon, which is for people new to Waiheke.
Yeah.
So, what was the motivation behind that? You're new to the island yourself?
I'm new to the island myself, so I just thought it was a really good way to for people new to the island to get to know each other, and You know, Waiheke's a great community, but, you know, it's a bit like school, really, you know. It's hard being new.
So, have you had experience of being new in other communities? Is it different coming to the island than, say, moving into other towns or suburbs?
I haven't really. I've lived overseas and being new there, I guess. And, yeah, it is hard to begin with. I think it's always hard to begin with because I think with Waiheke, you know, you don't have people around you that you've grown. If you haven't grown up there yourself, you don't have people around who've known you all your life. It's not easily accessible to go to your friends and family. So it is really a big move, really, starting again and getting to know people. It's actually quite a big thing.
Yeah, I was talking to a couple at an event in town, actually, a couple of weeks ago, and I recognised them from the ferry, and so I was, you know, having a chat, and they said that they'd been on the island for quite a few months, and I was the first person who'd kind of gone up to them and, you know, said, hey, I recognise you from the island, and they, you know, it was that. Sometimes people can feel a bit bound in, can't they, by that barrier of the ferry.
Yeah, I mean, you can, definitely. I think, in a way, it is up to... I mean, I actually think, as a community, Waiheke is one of the friendliest I've found, and there's definitely a feel of community here, because I have to sadly say that I am from Auckland. And, you know, you can get really lost in a big city. So I think there's so many benefits to Waiheke, but there is that thing where you have to be actively getting out and talking to people. And, you know, it really is... We don't grow out of it. You know, when we're kids, we want friends to play with when we're new, and we're just the same when we're adults, you know.
And so the event that you're having, you're getting people together and just a chance to meet others who are in the same kind of situation?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, we'll see how it goes tonight, but, you know, it may be something that we do on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because... yeah, especially over winter time, you know, when it's you know, everyone sort of hibernates.
Yeah, when you haven't got the beach to go to, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And so where are you getting together today?
We're getting together, I haven't looked out the window, but if it's I don't know if it's rain, I'm in Auckland right now, so if it's raining tonight, then we'll meet at Solar Cafe so that kids have something to play with there. It's the old lazy lounge. So kids, you know, there's toys and stuff for kids to play with. We'll grab a coffee, maybe grab dinner. But if it's not raining, we will be meeting at Palm Beach at the barbecue area. And just having like a shared barbecue there, so you can bring salads or something else, drinks, some meat for the barbie.
All right, and that's at 4:30?
4:30, yeah.
And
so Palm Beach, or if it's raining, it'll be Solar Cafe.
And since you're all new to the island, so you're not going to know each other, you're going to have a flag or something like that so people can find you.
No, we're not that organised, actually. But, I mean, definitely it'll be meeting at the barbecue area if the weather's fine. Otherwise, I'll have a table booked under Christina at the Solar Cafe. And I can give my mobile so that people can, you know, text me or ring
me.
Yep, that'll
be good.
Find out where we are.
Yep.
So that's 022-093-1822.
Good on you. And this is, you know, it's one thing to kind of think, okay, it'd be nice to meet some people, but another thing to kind of take this step or this initiative to put something like this together. I mean, are you just a community-minded kind of person, or what was it that led you to do it?
I guess so. I'm a little bit of both, really, because in terms of, I've got a bit of an entrepreneurial thing, so it's really hard for me to sit still and not create something, because I've got my own business. So I kind of have ideas jumping into my head constantly. But it's also, I am community-minded. I mean, I've founded a charity, and I'm always just aware of gaps. And whenever I have an issue, I sort of think, oh, yeah, how am I going to solve that one? Or how about we do this? So it's just... It's just me.
Okay, well, good luck for this afternoon. We hope it goes well and you get a good lot of people along there.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
There we go. That was Christina Patterson, who's organising the get-together for new Waiheke Islanders this afternoon, 4:30 at Palm Beach at the barbecue there, or otherwise at Solar if it's raining.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onewarra.